feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. For quite some time here on Searchlight, we have been looking at the story of Saul and David. Saul was the first king of Israel and became jealous of David and tried over and over again to kill David. But today we start a new chapter in the story. Saul has now died in battle, and David is about to be made king. And whereas Saul was a failure in many ways, David ascends to greatness. Let's now join Pastor John for our study in 2 Samuel chapter 2 and find out the secret to David's success.
2 Samuel chapter 2. And it came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." And David said, "Whither shall I go up? Where shall I go?" And the Lord said, "Unto Hebron." Here in verse 1, we see a real secret of David's success. We have an insight into his soul. Why it was that David was used so effectively. Why his life had such an impact, both then and still to this day as we study his history. David was a man, we read here in verse 1, who inquired of the Lord. It came to pass after this, we read, after what? After Saul had died, and now David is coming into power. What does he do? He inquires of the Lord. And this was David's lifestyle, really. He was a man who was in touch with the Lord, who inquired. Notice, and this is what intrigues me. It says he inquired, "Shall I go up into the cities of Judah? Is this the right time to do that?" The Lord said, "Yes, go up." David then came back and said, "Where should I go?" First, there was general directions and then specific instruction. He asked the question twice. First, generally, should I go up at this time? Is this time for me to make that kind of move? Yes. Well, where specifically? Where exactly should I go? David had this kind of communion with the Lord. And it's such a key. It's not that the Lord is a bad or a poor communicator. The Lord could have said, "Yes, go up to Judah and go to Hebron first." But the Lord didn't do that. The Lord gave David the information specifically that David asked for and waited till David asked for more. And it's not because the Lord is a poor communicator, like the story of that father that picked up his fourth grade son to take him to a dentist appointment. And the boy came out and got in his pop's car and said, "Oh, Dad, it's cool. We had play tryouts today for the school play. And I got a part. I'm a guy that's been married for 20 years. And the dad looked at his son and said, "That's great. Good for you. Keep up the good work. And before you know it, they'll give you a speaking role." He was playing the part of a guy that was married for 20 years, so that's why the dad said. And sometimes I think we read things like this and say, "Well, now, Lord, are you one that just kind of speaks sparingly. Why wouldn't you communicate more clearly? David said, shall I go up? Why didn't you say, go up and go to Hebron? Why did you wait until David asked a second question? Listen to me. It's not because the Lord is a poor communicator, but rather he's a rich communicator. What do you mean? He wants to have communion with me. And if he just gave me all the info and answered all the questions, what would happen? Well, I wouldn't be on my knees. I wouldn't be communing with him. The Lord is not being reluctant to give guidance. But there's something more important than guidance, and that's intimacy. And so the Lord waits till David asks a second question. So often people say, I just don't know what the Lord wants me to do. We say, well, have you asked him specifically? Have you really asked him again and again to see what he might say to you? Well, is he teasing me? That's not very nice of him to not just lay it all out and give it to me all at once. Well, perhaps it's because he loves you so much that he wants to have communion with you. He wants you to come into his presence time and again. He wants you to feel the embrace of his grace. He wants you to be in his presence, you see. David was a lover of God, a man after God's own heart. And right here from the get-go, we see a real key. Lord, should I go up? Yes, David, go up. Lord, where should I go up? Specifically, to Hebron. A real interesting thing. We are, you know, in a time right now when the Lord is calling us to prayer. Tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer, as you may know. And today it was interesting because we found ourselves praying for prayer. And then Dick Bowden shared at noontime once more about prayer. Sunday night at the second service, if you were here, once again, we were calling for prayer. It's something which is on the Lord's heart, I'm convinced. This is the time to pray. Pray. Tomorrow is that day of prayer and fasting. Take advantage of it. People all over are going to be in prayer. Join in, be a part of that. Prayer. I like what Corey Ten Boom had to say. Is prayer your steering wheel or is it your spare tire? Are you steered through the day like David was in our verse right here? Lord, what do you want me to do? Okay, Lord, got that. Now, specifically, how does that work? For many of us, too often, prayer is not the steering wheel, it's the spare tire. We pull it out of the trunk when we're feeling flat or when there's a blow up. We say, oh man, I'm sidelined, I'm depressed, I'm in trouble, I'm in a tough spot. Man, I better pray. Not that you shouldn't pray, but you know what? Prayer is not to be a spare tire, to be pulled out when things are flat or when there's a blowout. Prayer ought to be the steering wheel. It was for David, and it can be for me, and it can be for you too, where it really guides us through the day, keeps us out of the ruts and the ditches. Are you in a ditch? Are you in a rut? It very well might be because prayer, honestly, is your spare tire, not your steering wheel. And might the Lord be speaking to one right here, right now, who does believe in prayer and uses it when things are really bad and tough? But the Lord might be saying to you tonight, that's not what prayer is to be. It's to be the start of your day. It's to be steering you through every question, every challenge, every difficulty, every prosperous time and blessing too. I want you to be in communion with me. I really do, the Lord would say. Prayer. We can do more than pray, but we can't do anything until we first pray. Now, do I believe that? Some days. But some days I act as though I don't really believe it. I think I can get through my day. I can do my job. I can take care of the stuff around me. So I don't have time to pray because I've got stuff to do. What a dumb mistake. How dumb of me. Prayer, it is the key. It is the highest, most important calling of any believer, is to be in communion with the Father, to be in prayer. Why? To keep you out of the ditches of depression, the ruts of predictability, the snare of seductions, the flat tire of temptation. Prayer is the key. David here shows us this is the way to start as he becomes now in that position of taking authority over the nation, or starting to anyway. I read a while back about Mother Teresa, and she was being interviewed. And the interviewer, and I quote this, you love people when others regard them as human debris. You love people when others regard them as human debris. Mother Teresa worked with the lepers and those that were diseased and AIDS infected and dying. You know her story. And this interviewer said, what's your secret? And she said, my secret is simple. I pray. Two words. That's all she had to say. I mean, here's this interviewer in this magazine article. What's your secret? How can you have such love for people? Why do you have such compassion for others that most would say that's just a waste of time or human debris, or why are you wasting your energy? She said, it's real simple, the love I have, the compassion I feel. My secret is simple. I pray. That's why Jesus would say, pray for your enemies, the people that bug you. Might be your boss at work or the husband sitting next to you. Whoever it might be, pray. Because it will work a wonder. Not just one prayer, but like David, pressing in, communicating with him, experiencing intimacy on your knees, talking out loud. John, we get the point. Why are you going on and on? Because I wonder how many of us really do pray with intimacy consistently. I wonder tonight, not the person sitting next to you, not the one up in front or the one back there behind, but are you a man, a woman of prayer? And if I become a man of prayer, if you become a person who prays, we are going to experience blessings that will blow our minds. You have not because you ask not. I have asked, but you gave up. You didn't come back and commune with the Father like you should have, like you could have. David did. David was a man who prayed. And we see that at the very get-go right here. I like that. Well, go up. Where, Lord? Since you're asking, okay, to Hebron. David heard the Lord say that day. So David went up. He did just what he heard, verse 2. He and his two wives, Ahinoam and Abigail. And, verse 3, his men that were with him did David bring up. Every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Is this the time for me to go up and begin my reign? Yes. Where? To Hebron. Okay. And it says, he went up, and I want to call your attention to verse 3. The men that were with him, David did bring up every single one. Who were these men? These were the guys that were ragtag renegades, remember? Men that were distressed, in debt, discontent. But as they hung around David, they became more like David. And there was also some men in that company that we read a few weeks ago, a few studies back, that were weary and couldn't go on with David and the other guys who went to fight the enemy. They stayed back and guarded the supplies. Do you remember that story? So you have renegades and you have some guys that are energetic, some guys that are weaker and faint-hearted a bit. But it says this, when David went up to reign and established the kingdom, he brought all of the men with him, all of them. The Lord is going to say one day not too far away, come up. Come up, you ragtag renegades. You that did well and you that are a bit weak and feeble too, come up. It's this thing called the rapture that I'm looking forward to. And sometimes people ask us, don't they? Well, is everybody going to go in the rapture? Are all the believers going to go? What about the ones that are kind of faint-hearted or feeble? The ones that aren't really on fire? Guess what? It says here. It says right in our verse. David did bring up every man. See, we're the bride of Christ. And when I took my bride on a honeymoon, when I said, come on, hun, we're on our way. When I scooped her up and took her to Hawaii that day, I took every part of her. I didn't leave her little toe behind or didn't say, you know what, I'm going to leave that part because I like this part, but not... Well, there's no part. That didn't come out right. There's no part that I like every... But even if... Let's see. How am I going to work this out right? My point is, you get my point. The whole bride goes. We are the bride of Christ. You see? There's a special reward in heaven for pastors' wives. I'm convinced of that. But the whole bride goes. And this is important because there are those saying... Around here and in the valley, well, only those that are on fire are going to go up in the rapture. And those that are not ready, even though they're believers, are going to be left behind to be purged. I've been dealing with that in recent days, those kinds of comments. Not true. Not so. Because where do you draw that line, first of all? Well, you draw it right where I am. I'm going up and you're not, you see, wherever I... That's what happens. I've never yet talked to somebody in this valley who embraces that view, who says, well, I believe that only the on-fire Christians are going to go. It's a strong conviction of mine, and I'm not one of them. I got some purging that needs to take place in my life. Never. It's always, yeah, well, we're on fire, and you guys aren't, type of thing. David called the whole gang up, and they all went. And I like this. That's the way it's going to be. The whole bride goes. Whether you're on the front lines like some mighty men were, or if you're feeble and hanging back like some did in our story. Yet when it came time for David to rule and reign, hey, all of you guys are going. And they all began that reign there in Hebron or Hebron together. And the men of Judah came, they anointed David at that time, right then. They told David, saying, David, the men of Jabesh-Gilead, they were the ones that buried Saul. Now, they were probably tattletaling here. You know the ones that rescued Saul off the wall from Beth Shemesh when the Philistines came and chopped off Saul's head and hung his naked corpse on the wall at Beth Shemesh? David, it was the men of Jabesh-Gilead. They're the ones. The Israelites on the east side of the Jordan River. Those guys way over there, kind of out of fellowship, if you would. They're not in the promised land like we. They were the ones that went and rescued Saul. And I suspect strongly that the idea is, now that you're coming into power, go nail the men of Jabesh-Gilead for burying Saul in that way, for showing compassion to Saul, you see. That's what the men of Judah were saying. Okay, David, here you are. You're the new king. Hey, let me tell you, the guys that were helping out Saul when he was hanging on the wall. But David wasn't upset with the men of Jabesh-Gilead at all. In fact, verse 5 says, he sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said, oh, blessed be ye of the Lord, that you have shown kindness to your Lord, even to Saul, and you buried him. And now the Lord, verse 6, show kindness and truth to you. And I also requite you this kindness, or show you kindness too, because you have done this thing. So let your hands be strengthened and be valiant. Don't be afraid. Don't be weary. Don't be freaked out. I'm proud of you, David would say. I'm not out to get you. You're not my enemy. I'm glad that you showed compassion to Saul. That's a good thing you did, you see. Your master, verse 7, goes on to say, Saul is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me as king over them. I'm king now, over the tribe of Judah anyway. But I'm not mad at you. I'm not down on you. I'm not here to mete out judgment against you. Important. Because sometimes there are people on the other side of the river. They might be from a different denomination, if you would, or a different theological persuasion. They might be a little bit different than you or different than me in their flavor. But if they're part of the family at all, even if they're on the other side of the river, we ought to esteem whatever we can and approve everyone we can. And say, you know, it's good what you're doing. It's not exactly my style, maybe, but it's good. And I hope that you guys from the Applegate family will continue to go throughout the valley and affirm every other Christian and every other church. That is, the churches that are teaching the word and believe in Jesus Christ. There will be those who will say, hey, did you hear what those guys are doing over there? Isn't that awful? Can you believe that they said that or they're teaching this or whatever it might be? Sure, we have to deal with errors and make corrections theologically, but let there be a heart in us like David had. I'm not mad at those guys. I'm glad, he said to them, that you showed compassion to your master, your king, Saul. It's a good thing you did, you see. Well, Abner, verse 8, who was Saul's cousin, he was Saul's man, he wants to now retain power for Saul's family and also to retain power for himself personally. So Abner, he was captain of Saul's host, he was Saul's chief of staff, if you would, took Ish-bosheth, who was one of Saul's sons. Saul had four sons, three of them died with him on Mount Gilboa. One, Ish-bosheth, he was one that wasn't in the battle, evidently. So Abner grabs him, he's a prince, and brought him over to Mahanaim and made him king over Gilead and over Asherites and over the Jezreel area and Ephraim and Benjamin and over all of Israel except what tribe? Judah. That's where David was from. And they were the ones that said to David, we recognize your authority. And they anointed him as king. But the other tribes, well, Abner says, here's your man, Saul's son. He's the crowned prince. The other three are dead. He's the one that ought to rule and reign.
Uh-oh, it looks like David has a problem brewing. He has just been crowned king of Judah, and already there is conflict. Please join us again next time as we see how this story unfolds. We'll see you then.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com. That's johncorson.com.
Pastor John has often encouraged us to spend time each day contemplating the Word of God. One great way to do this is with a daily devotional. Pastor John has put together three daily devotionals that cover the entire Bible. A Pillar by Day and A Day of Feasting are taken from the Old Testament. A Day's Journey is a devotional from the New Testament. Each daily devotional has 365 short meditations and are presented in John's insightful and practical style. You may order each daily devotional from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.